Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I am your host, Mark Halem, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt. My audio is coming from a place that I cannot seem to find. Maybe it's even further away now. And welcome to this very special edition of That's Not Quite All, Folks, where anything... can go wrong. Anyway,
that's right.
What we wanted to do was take you back to the first couple of months of this podcast and talk about how we were doing things then and cartoons we talked about in 2020. Man, what a time it was.
Yes, indeed. Jordan, I gotta be honest with you. Reflecting back on the first like couple of months of the show, I thought the audio quality was a little bit better than this.
No, it was horrible.
We go back to the regular audio now.
Yeah, we might have to.
All right. Yes. So, I feel so much
okay,
better.
Yeah. All right. Actual audio.
Nice
okay.
Fidelity.
Good. Woo! Hooray! All right. Let me just make sure that we have the audio
all
correct.
Right.
So we were saying we had to make the cartoon for ourselves, and so.
All right, speaking of that.
Yeah.
So, the shorts that we are covering today, like you said, Jordan, there are two shorts we covered from the very beginnings of this show. And the shorts we're covering are One Froggy Evening and The Bear's Tale.
Yeah, no, we chose both of these for a specific reason. One Froggy Evening was one, obviously, that I liked. And Mark, I think you were... not quite at a 5 for that one. I re-listened to both of our conversations about both of these, actually, in order to...
I'm glad you did, because I didn't.
Oh, good. Okay, because I wanted to make sure that we didn't say anything that we didn't say already 4 years ago. And I hopefully we're going to succeed at that, because we don't want to give you guys, you know, I've already heard this before. No, we're going to try and say different things. But... yeah, One Frog Evening obviously is one that I loved 4 years ago and Mark had some concerns with, and we'll see if that holds up, whereas Bear's Tale was one that we hated.
I did not like it at all.
And here's the weird thing about us hating that cartoon. We were like, the whole conversation was us going, oh, this doesn't work. Oh, why are we doing this? And at the end, we still both gave it a 3 out of 5. So, like, we're like, oh, awful. Actually, a 3 out of 5. So, like, which, I mean, it's pretty good. Like, there are shorts that, like, you know, we liked that we gave a 3 out of 5 to. Like, that's still a passing grade, technically.
It is. It is. And I gotta say, and going back to Bear's Tale, I kind of learned some things. I learned some new appreciations that I don't think I had in previously. So,
yes.
So that'll be a lot of fun.
So... It's actually very good that we're doing both of these again. And what's also really cool, because I don't know if we go over this very often when we do the show, is the way we work it is that, you know, when we do a threefer, we do, you know, Jordan covers one, Mark covers one, and then we both do the last one. And then we do these alternating so that I cover the first one, and the next week Mark covers the first one. And so the way we alternate it, then... The way the formula worked then, One Froggy Evening was one that I covered and Bear's Tale was one that you covered. And the way that it worked out for this redux was the opposite, which I actually think really works. Whereas Mark, the one that you, and unless I completely balls this up, the one that you did the notes for was One Froggy Evening, and the one that I did the notes for was Bear's Tale.
I kind of did the notes for both of them.
Oh, okay. That works too.
Even I wasn't too entirely sure. But you know what? Yeah, sure. Yeah, we can go with that. This show we have here is One Froggy Evening. You've never heard of it.
No,
it
never.
It came out on December 31st, 1955. That's New Year's Eve.
Yeah. So you ring out 1955 with one of the best shorts. Like, all right, year's yeah. over, you know.
On this day, the General Motors Corporation became the first U.S. corporation to make over $1 billion this year.
Yeah.
Are they still making $1 billion?
No, they're not. GM, I think, has sort of gone a bit downhill since 1955. You know, a lot of other corporations are making $1 billion, so then that's pretty bad.
We covered this episode originally in the one with... What's Opera Duck? Because, you know, trying to make it more obvious for everybody. You know, it's like, yes. Oh.
And it worked.
Which was the one with the Looney Tunes podcast. Oh, yes. It's one of our most listened to episodes. A lot of people listen to the episode still.
And I like that one a lot. Because it had, A, it was really good analysis. B, it was three really, really, really good shorts. And C, it was, you know, the fateful moment where Mark refused to give One Froggy Evening 5 out of 5.
That was a bitter young man back then.
You're bitter now! We're both bitter!
Yeah. So that episode came out... I'm going to be super meta with this again. So that episode came out on December 14th, 2020. Mm. And that was a very busy day. Because on that day, America begins its first COVID-19 vaccinations using the Pfizer/BioNTech vaccine.
Oh.
And... The U.S. Electoral College votes 306 to 232 to officially affirm Joe Biden's presidential election victory.
Yeah,
and nothing bad happened after that.
And that went well.
Went perfectly. One Friday Evening was directed by Chuck Jones, written by Michael Maltese. So how do we discuss this, Jordan? Should we go through it gag by gag, or should we do like a general discussion of the thing?
Por que no los dos, because I have a lot of discussion points that are, you know, done in, you know, I wrote notes for this like I would normally write notes for this, whereas I have, like, discussion points. Like, it's not exactly a gag-by-gag kind of thing, but there's a lot to talk about with this, especially considering all the conversations we've had in the last 150 episodes since we've done this.
All right, so, One Froggy Evening is a short about a man. Well,
it's a frog. You're doing great.
It's a man discovering a frog. Thank you. It's a man... discovering this frog at this demolition site.
Yes.
He opens the box, finds out the frog's hundreds of years old, as the frog all of a sudden comes to life and starts singing. The frog can only sing for the one who discovered him.
And that man's name was Jim Henson.
Sure. You're technically not wrong. That's the thing. You're technically not wrong.
And now a major corporation has a hand up his ass, anyway.
So, this man takes this frog into a talent agency. He wants to get rich off the frog because he's sick and tired of his job. So he goes to a talent agency, tries to show them how this frog can sing and is a talent. And of course, the frog just acts like a frog in front of other people. He doesn't sing. It makes the man look insane. After he gets hit down the talent agency, the man discovers a theater for rent. Rents out the theater using all of his savings. He's putting everything into this frog. We then cut over to the theater where the presentation's they're practicing it. He's really good, he's singing because no one else in the theater. The man then opens the door. No one's going in to see this frog. He tries multiple ways to get people in. Eventually, free booze is what gets people into the theater. By the way, Jordan, that reminds me, we should offer some free liquor in order to get people to give to our Patreon. I think that would really be helpful.
Oh no, and get accused of bootlegging? Yeah, that's their life from me. Sure. That'll go smoothly.
Well, you know what else didn't go smoothly? This performance, because the man then gets pelted by fruits and vegetables. Because the frog has not sung. We cuddle over to the park. Michigan J. Frog is just singing opera to himself. A police officer comes, wants to know who sang for reasons.
It's a public ordinance kind of thing. It's like, you know, you can't be singing in the park late at night or something because, you know, you got to keep the streets clean or whatever. You know, it's because cops really don't like, you know, they like having excuses to beat the shit out of people. And you can see that to this day.
Because that's the commentary Chuck Jones and Michael Maltese wanted to say.
Probably.
Fuck the police.
Yeah.
Fuck the police coming straight from the underground. They got him back because the frog is green.
We've established that Chuck and Frizz were big fans of 90s hip hop.
So, the cop takes the old man to an insane asylum. Sure. As we get this reveal later, that he's gone out of the loony bin, pun intended, and he just sees a new building is being erected. He drops the frog into the building to have it be someone else's problem. Cut to the future. A futuristic man finds the frog, opens the container, the frog sings to him, and the cycle repeats itself.
So, right at the beginning, I find it interesting because we talked in the Rhapsody and Rivets discussion about how the rise in industry and the rise in high-rises gave way to timely pieces of art because all these different animators and filmmakers were basically seeing the skylines of cities built right before their eyes, and it was about, you know, the bastion of progress. And this cartoon in itself is about progress. You know, here buildings are being demolished in order to make way for bigger buildings, taller buildings, newer buildings. And it's about, you know, I mean, even if it is a very small part of the actual story of this, it is very much the theme of just like, okay, what's going to keep things moving forward? What's going to keep the doors open in places? What's going to keep entertaining people? And it's a small story that again cycles through this, you know, the progress of history. And I think that, because again, I think we talked about some of that when we did Another Froggy Evening, because that was about, you know, just all throughout time and all throughout, you know, but that's less, I think, of a theme there than it is here.
What do we think about our main character? Not the frog, the man. Like, what do you think he represents in today's society, even from the 1950s? Because I think that this idea, right, and like, I made a joke about our Patreon, but it's kind of true. People, they want to create a better life for themselves, to profit off of something that provides entertainment to others.
Yeah.
And it's really, it is this balancing act of, is the act good enough and will people pay to see it? And I think what's fascinating about what Froggy Evening's perspective on that is that the frog is good. The people just don't believe it. They don't want to see it.
You know, an audience is always wanting to see the strings behind the actor. The audience cannot take an act at face value. They have to see what goes into it. You know, there's all these people at magic shows that want to know how the trick was done and want to ruin the trick for themselves, regardless of the actual, you know, spectacle of it. And so you can't just give these people a singing frog. You have to make sure they see and hear the frog so that they know that it's real. They can't just hear the voice of a generation and buy that as itself. They have to think, oh, where's the frog? Is it coming from the frog? You know, it has to have both halves in the same thing. In terms of your initial question, what do we think of this main character? What does he represent, I think you asked. The sort of... It's something that's, I think, a lot more relevant now than it was in 1955. The sort of greed, the sort of, like, you know, the you see something incredible and the first thought you have is, how can I make money off of this? That's something that I think has spread to 2024, which is, how can I commoditize something that is already a natural, or how do I make money off of a genuine effort, a genuine subhuman effort? And you've seen stories of this before. You've seen... You know, Bong Joon-ho did the Okja film about the sort of, like, the commoditization of some new natural species of animal that has never come before. Or, like, they talked about it in Nelly's Folly, where they make the singing giraffe into a star and then ruin her for Hollywood. And you have somebody like this who is basically the summation of, okay, what does this mean for me? What does this, the appearance of a singing frog on the planet, mean for me? I think you can also throw the Family Guy episode in there as well, the one where Peter discovers Jesus working in a record shop and then sells him out and ruins a good thing by throwing celebrity and money into things. It's a theme that's persisted to this day, and I think this gets it spot on, because, you know, he is the victim of his own greed, and everything that happens to him is his own fault. So, just the shot of the frog's eyes peering out from the box the first time we see him, that is funny enough, because he hasn't even done anything yet. He's just peering out there. And Chuck and the animation team knew that in order for this to work, the frog would need to look very silly on itself without doing anything. And I think that Dan Pobenmeyer would keep this in mind for Phineas and Ferb, because you have Perry the Platypus looking insanely silly and animal-like on his own, and then when he's in action, he looks more human-like. This is the same thing for Michigan J. Frog. He moves very much like a frog, but he's also very much human-like in dancing and singing. He's more human-like in dancing and singing than he is when laying around and acting like an actual frog. There is still something funny, though, because, I mean, we know very contemporarily, because Michigan J. Frog has been used as the mascot for a television network for other Looney projects. We know specific sprites and angles of Michigan J. Frog, you know, specific profiles of him. We don't see a lot of shots of Michigan J. Frog front-facing. And I think there's a reason for that, because front-facing, Michigan J. Frog just looks like a green little happy guy.
So an example of that is when we see, I believe it's when they're doing the rehearsal for the in theater.
Yeah.
And it's on top of the wire doing this. And like, it's far away. If you really look at it, he's just, oh, that's just a goober.
That's just a guy.
Just a happy little goober. Just a guy.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of those, because, and especially if they're at, like, enough of an angle away. Like, if they're, like, if it's a middle, like, a mid shot, or, like, a wide shot, and you just see just little green guy front-facing, then it looks kind of awkward. And you don't see a lot of those repeatedly, because obviously they're better at close-ups and profiles. And today, they learned to only sort of show him in close-ups and profiles, because then he looks kind of awkward if they don't. But again, the strength of this animation unit to take a very expressive, moving character like Michigan J. Frog, cram him down and pop out a motionless, static frog, this is why they were so good back in the day, because they could just mix motion with emotion, with the lack of motion, in seconds. And it's funny, because the construction worker, just design-wise, is similar. Because when he's in thought, or when he's mad, he's very simply animated. The eyes do all the work. But when he's excited and having big emotions, he's almost completely different looking. So expressive, so much going on. It's funny that this sort of dual design mentalities work with both characters. Like, we have somebody who's, you know, expressive and then motionless. We have someone who's, you know, whose eyes do all the lifting and then who moves with an entire body when things don't go his way. And that's a really good contrast.
He sent this image of a messenger, but the moment he's with the talent agency...
That's my favorite scene in this.
He's lifting up the frog. He's looking over him. And he's like, and like sweat's coming off of him.
Yeah.
Just, for a character who doesn't say anything, we don't even know his name, we sure know a lot about how he thinks and operates. Like you look at that expression, he's going, oh, shit. Like, oh, it's supposed to work. It's like,
it's us whenever we, the image of, The construction worker sweat running down, trying to do whatever they can, was the exact same image of me and Mark right before the Bob Bergen episode, when every single technical thing was going wrong.
Yeah, I don't believe we told that story on the show, actually.
Yeah, we did our Bob Bergen episode. We were going to record on Zencaster, which we're recording on right now. And literally, like, 5 minutes, he's like, hey, I do iPad recording. At Zencaster, don't roll like that.
I don't roll like that. Yeah, Bob talks like that. Yeah, I don't roll like that.
So we kind of freaked out a little bit. We hopped onto Google Meet, and then I couldn't record the Google Meet because I literally, like, 2 days ago, I switched the plan to, like, save some money. Like, I switched, like, the cheaper plan. And they're like, hey, if you want to record, you have to be on the highest. I'm like, fuck. So, like, I hopped on there, said pop the link, and immediately, it's like, hey, we're sorry. And he's like, yeah, everyone says it's like Zoom. It's never like Zoom. We're like,
nope.
Sorry. We're sorry.
But yeah, like you were saying, the funniest scene in this short to me is this talent agency scene, because dialogue is happening, but we're not hearing it. And I'm a really big fan of seeing dialogue and expression, but not actually hearing it, because the jokes and story can come through visually. So seeing the talent agent's stone-faced reply compared to the construction worker's zeal and excitement and eventual panic is so good. It doesn't need dialogue. Like, again, as you said, the sweat running down his face, just moving the frog around frantically. So fucking funny. The muted brass music as he moves the... And I also love the brief moment where the talent agent looks at us, like, you guys seeing this? All of that is incredible, because it's nothing working. Him and the box being thrown outside, Michigan going into his song, him running right back in there trying to explain to him. And the angle and animation.
I love this. I love this. The expression on the guy when he's like big eyed, like runt. It's like,
But the angle on Michigan finishing the song, plopping back down, and the door opening is incredible. Like, just, that's not a sort of camera angle we see very often. Like, you know, just literally the frog is in front of us. And we just see the looks on the expressions of the talent agent and the construction worker. And you just see everything just go to shit there. It's a really dramatic and just well-detailed moment. Again, this is only an animation crew. This is just what they were capable of. But yeah, there's just lots of fun visuals in the second half of this. The theater marquee is really silly. I also love the shot of the crowd chucking vegetables at the construction worker's head.
We should bring that back.
Yes. More people should just bring vegetables, tomatoes to events in case they're really bad.
Stop throwing your underwear at Harry Styles.
Throw tomatoes at
him. At Adele. Yeah, throw
throw them at Ringo, too. Even though he doesn't like that line. I told you not to. That is not peaceful and or lovely.
I changed it. How do you all know this?
Oh, wait now, Ringo. We know.
I've been prepared for this since Ringo's Ukenslocken.
What?
No. What was it? Ringo's...
Rotogravure?
Yes, that. Yes.
No, I want it from now on. That will be called Ringo's Ukenslocken. From the maker of Runnerink. I love that the thing is, I love that we film these now because you can catch the exact moment where I dropped whatever joke I was about to do, registered what you just said, and short-circuited. Because I'm literally like, I'm still tossing the tomato. I'm like, Ukenschlocken, what the fuck's that? Is that a Swedish word for tomato or something? I don't know any Swedish. I don't know any Dutch either, but I know more Dutch.
But that hasn't stopped you.
I know more Dutch than I know Swedish, apparently. But I love the moment where he's singing in the park, and you see again, you convey this without dialogue, where the cop's hat passes by the fence, and you literally hear him make a noise as he stops in his tracks, and you see the hat almost move up. And he hears the singing and then he sort of comes around. Again, you convey that without dialogue and that's without even facial expressions, and that's fantastic. And, I mean, it's a simple ending. It's funny because my history with this cartoon is I would watch it a lot during the airings of A Thousand One Rabbit Tales. And they would cut off this ending. And I just sort of assumed that it ended with him throwing him back in there. And because it would just cut back to Bugs and going, that's the story of the singing frog. And then not Eddie Deason would whine some more. I genuinely thought it was him. But yeah, no, the ending here, which I think is the only ending you can have where the cycle continues again 100 years later. Yeah, you know, it's a perfect way to go out.
It's really good. And also what is funny, Jordan, because I think one of the reasons why I decided to put One Friday Evening in here wasn't just because I felt bad. The other reason was, last year, Turner Classic Movies, for Warner Bros. 100th anniversary, was like, randomly, hey, we're going to show Looney Tunes cartoons within our movie schedule, so you can have, like, a Looney Tunes short followed by a movie. And one of the days was One Friday Evening, and I just so happened to catch the ending of this cartoon. And I watched the ending of this going, damn, this is really good. This is, like, really good.
Yep.
Shit.
It's just a really good cartoon. Like, I would go back and forth as to what my favorite one was because, you know, I would usually put up something like Rabbit Seasoning or something like High Diving Hair. I think that One Froggy Evening is my favorite Looney Tunes cartoon of all time. What it does with storytelling, with timing, with humor, cosmic justice, just a really fun concept, always impresses me. And I could watch this a million times and I would still absolutely love it. I think it's because it doesn't really rely on any pre-existing concepts and it's just Chuck Jones and Michael Maltese playing with ideas in this little O. Henry story that I think it's held up so much. It's not like relying on Bugs to do something or relying on Daffy to do something. It's just very omnipresent and evergreen ideas, no pun intended, and just a really fun concept that could make sense in another 60 years. It could make sense the whole time. You know, what if there was a singing frog that no one would be able to believe you that could sing? And it really is fantastic, and I think they executed it perfect.
Can I do a pitch for a terrible version of that for 2024?
Yes.
So what would the TikTokification of Michigan J. Frog look like?
They'd speed up his voice to, like, chipmunk sound, and they'd play him behind a woman's ass implants falling out. I don't know.
Right, because, like, I'm just thinking, like... Like, if someone, like, finds the frog and goes, yes, you'll be a viral star. And then, like, as soon as they take the camera out, it's like, no.
But they use his music as background music, and they're like, oh, who's doing that? Well, it's a frog. No, it's not. No, it is. Yeah. All right, then put the camera.
Yeah. All right. There you go.
The thing is that... Watching this ending, and because I listened back to your exact criticism of the ending, which was that there were some reused animation shots and it didn't sync entirely. And I can agree with that, because there are some awkward moments in throwing together this ending because they were trying to save money on animation because it was the late 50s. But I don't know. To me, that doesn't ruin it for me, you know. But it's what you value.
Yeah. Listen, this is a perfect three-act story. Just the discovery and the aspiration and the defeat and it goes on to the end of time. It really is a fantastic short. Reused animation, I don't care. Anyway, you know what I'm gonna be honest with you? I kind of dropped that as a criticism as we've done the show. Like, okay. I don't really much care for reused animation bits anymore. Unless it's, like, unnecessary.
Yeah.
If it's, like, a weird, like... Oh, like one of your, like, okay, a good example of this, is the Sniffles and the Bookworm.
Oh, yeah. Short,
where I'm pretty sure the opening shot of Sniffles against the library.
Reused.
And the last shot are the exact same shot. They just switched out some frames. That's, you know, it's like, well, okay, we're just doing that to kill time, to provide a wrap up without actually putting a good story reason behind it. This doesn't deserve that criticism. It's a damn good story.
Yeah. And the thing is that, like, because toward the beginning, you were a bit more trigger-friendly on pointing out animation flaws. And I think that, like, as we went on, I would find those. And it would always be, like, me, like, oh, yeah, this is here. And you're like, no, I didn't catch that one. So I was like, I was trying to be like you. I was trying to be critical on all ends. But now, you know, I think that... You softened as I kind of hardened on it, which is kind of interesting. So, I mean, there's no wrong answer. It's really just what you value.
Good night, everybody. All right, well, when are we arguing this?
Oh, I'm still giving it a 5 out of 5. I think this is immaculate.
Yes, I'm also giving it a 5 out of 5.
Animals. Growth! We got there! We made it!
Yes!
Hooray! Ah! God, you could bury me with this fucking cartoon. I love it so much. It really is. I don't do this very often with Looney Tunes cartoons, but, like, it's a prerequisite that, like, if you enjoy this cartoon, then it's a good chance that I will try and keep you in my life. And there isn't a lot of people that don't enjoy this cartoon, so.
Dish, man. Who have you shown this cartoon to?
No, nobody.
Like, I'm not into it. Oh, okay.
I mean, there's been times where, like certain movies that are my prerequisite movies, where, like, if somebody doesn't like them, then I don't do it. There was someone I dated very briefly that I had never seen The Princess Bride, which is a prerequisite movie for me. And so I showed it to her one night, and she maybe got 10 minutes into it and couldn't take it seriously because of all the As You Wish stuff. She thought it was the stupidest thing ever. And she wanted me to turn up the movie so we could cuddle. And so we did that. And the relationship did not last for other reasons. But I'm not going to lie and say that wasn't one of them. But, like, you know, everybody else I've dated since, I've made sure, hey, do you like The Princess Bride? And they're like, yeah! And so we're good.
So was she watching the movie going, I agree with the Fred Savage kid. This stuff's sappy. This is stupid.
Kind of. Like, she didn't even get to the really cool stuff yet. I don't even know if she got to Vizzini. Like, come on now. Mm. Anyway, I hear she lives alone. But the next one that we're talking about in this one is the one that we were not as kind to 4 years ago, which is the one that has led to the long-running gag of not even saying the title, but just sort of mumbling it in frustration. That title being... The first time I did it, it was so, like, I wasn't happy. I was just sort of, like, going, I was like, Bear's Tale. I went, Bear's Tale, Tale of Bears, Bear's Tale. I'm just gritting my teeth. Picture Milton with this and in the stapler in Office Space going, I'm going to print this place to the ground. I swear to God. My rig swing line stapler. I swear to God. Yeah. The Bear's Tale was released on April 13th, 1940. I picked different on this day from the one that I picked back then, because the one I picked back then was about the Rangers winning the Stanley Cup, which, if you ask certain members of my family, should have happened more often. Could you believe who's owning the team now? Holy crap. If they get a new owner, they'll win 5 more Stanley Cups in a year. That is genuinely how my uncle sounds talking about the Rangers. The Rangers and the Knicks are owned by a sociopath. He sells the team to someone worth a damn, then we can get something done. Unlike my screenwriting professor, I don't care if he listens to this. He'll be like, yeah, I did say that. Yeah, you got me. The On This Day I did find for this one. And I will... You can cut this if you think it's verging on what are we even doing here. English businessman and Formula One driver and administrator Max Mosley was born on this day. That is not how I first heard about Max Mosley. Max Mosley was a recurring bit on Mock the Week. Because in 2008... Max Mosley wouldn't be involved in a scandal following the revelation that he'd partaken in a Nazi-themed orgy with several women wearing Nazi uniforms. And the point of humor was Mosley having the rebuttal of, absolutely not! They were military uniforms. So... When that's in my mind, I when I hear the name Max Mosley, I hear Nazi-themed orgy in the back of my mind. And now maybe some of you will have that kind of correlation if this does make the episode, which I'm not sure if it will. I just picture Mark just like editor Mark, like thinking about this, hearing this bit, and just late at night. Just as like the dun 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 as plays in the background going, do I keep the bit? Do I risk losing our credibility? What am I even doing here?
Spidey, we're close to 100 episodes. Our credibility went out the window a long time ago. But also I do have a question. So who provided the lube and condoms, Mel Brooks?
Sprint! Yeah.
Sex time for Hitler.
And just the girls come in goose-stepping, and it's... Oh boy, it is time to clean Max! Oh no! Anyway, the Bear's Tale.
It just becomes the porn parody. Anyways, go.
I want to move on before we lose everybody that we haven't already lost. The Bear's Tale is a Tex Avery cartoon, obviously. J.B. Hardaway, who is also credited as Ben Hardaway in other cartoons, I think his name was changed to prevent the innocent, wrote it. I want to make sure that we get this right, because in the original episode from 2020, we erroneously said that Bea Benaderet voiced Mama Bear. Mark, you were right in saying that it was Sarah Berner. I think it was briefly listed as Bea Benaderet, but that was not correct, because that's Sarah Berner.
Oh.
Very clearly Sarah Berner playing both Mama Bear and Little Red Riding Hood. Robert C. Bruce narrates, Mel does some voices, Bernice Hansen does some voices, and Tex Avery is also in it as Papa Bear, doing his one Tex Avery voice. But yeah, when we looked at this back in 2020, I don't think we got it. I think that we were confused as to why it took this very slow storybook pace and why it was not 9 minutes long and why there was so much time spent on Tex Avery going, we didn't get it. And I think now that we've covered like 5,000 more Looney Tunes cartoons, I get it a little bit more.
And covering much more Tex Avery.
And more Disney. Because remember when we covered both Disney's Three Little Pigs and Warner's Pigs in a Polka? And we talked about how they were basically using the original Three Little Pigs and subverting pretty much everything in it in order to make a funny cartoon out of it. Well, that's what they're doing here. I don't know if there was an official Disney Three Bears cartoon to go off of. But basically, Tex Avery and the company were like, okay, everything cute that Disney would do, let's do the opposite. And that really is why this short is what it is. So, I do like the initial storybook credits of this, as you literally see the turning page. And there is something kind of cool to turning a page and painting like landscape and then seeing the landscape move in animation. Again, they're trying to be Disney. They're trying to play off of Snow White and the sort of fairy tale, Disney, cutesy kind of thing without much subversion. And this just adds the subversion. And pretty soon into it, you see that subversion. Because while the tone is very Disney, the visuals and character designs are very anarchic. Like, the mom and the papa bear don't look cute. They're kind of grotesque almost and over-large and with different faces. And I also love... And again, you get the idea of something being off because instead of the bowls of porridge just sort of landing on the table, they slam on the table from above. Tex is already trying to permeate the cutesy kind of storybook trope that he's been sending up throughout this.
And I think something else that they make fun of is the music that's really used in these Disney cartoons where they know the cues. They know exactly what cues Disney would have used in the Three Little Bears cartoons. They're like, okay, in this one... We're going to use them, but we're going to be very weird with it. Like, it's actually going to stop naturally. It's going to abruptly stop.
Yeah.
And then, that's what's and they'll abruptly stop.
Yeah.
And then later, like, okay, we'll play the same music, but we'll speed it up.
Yeah. And then there are a lot of music cues in this as well, but, like, a lot of them, they're just poking fun at it as well and just sort of, like, okay, this is a little on the nose, let's use that. It's hard to tell good satire if it's being done really well because it blends in with the actual... thing that it's a part of. But this is very good satire. Like, we talked about this in the original about the hot water gag because we liked it then. I like it a lot more now because it's Papa Bear's reaction to the hot porridge works for him because he initially brushes off a reaction like, "Ah, sure, I don't know." Then he runs to the sink and I love the frantic zoom in when he realizes that he turned on the hot water. It feels like a Simpsons gag. It feels like a Homer Simpson thing.
That's the most I got out of watching it this time, which is going oh, the father bear is just Homer Simpson.
Exactly. There's a lot of moments where I'm like, okay, this is just season 2 or season 3 era Homer Simpson where he's just very dumb goofball that does silly things as opposed to... Because again, I think they're trying to do like the sort of good-natured, well-to-do Papa Bear that's like, oh, okay, kids, today we're going to do this. Well, what's the nth degree of that? The nth degree of that is, oh, okay, why don't we... things like that. And so they're playing things over the top as if to sort of put a mirror to it and go, isn't this ridiculous? And it is. Because again, it's like... And again, just like that, is Papa Bear spending 10 seconds laughing at his own joke. It's just the nth degree of the normal trope of the jelly Papa Bear. And around here, it occurred to me that this is a lot like what Airplane did to the movie Zero Hour, which is taking a pre-existing piece of media and subverting and upending almost every line and twisting it on its head to provide laughs. This is what this is doing. There isn't really a tangible source that I'm aware of, though. The other piece of that is that they gave Mama Bear the voice of Sarah Berner, which is harsh and jarring rather than a calming, sympathetic mom voice. And I think that's another really funny subversion because she's like, ah, well, you know, doing one of her many voices. And which is, she was great at. Also, the mirror turnaround gag is very silly and very Tex Avery.
I just love how, like, throughout this cartoon, the baby bear, because, like, in any other adaption, the baby bear would get all the attention. I do like how in this, the baby bear is not the focus. Hell, the bears aren't even become the focus, even 2 minutes in this cartoon. As it just goes over to Goldilocks with, again, the music. Just the... It's sarcastic. It's like a child making fun of the type of things this would be. It's just like, yeah. Oh, this fucking bitch. Oh, look at this goddamn Goldilocks.
Let's play it up.
Dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it also just like, again, it's playing up the whimsical nature of the parents, because we have this shot of the bears on a tandem bike. And I do love the traditional, like, you stop the traditional forest music in its tracks and smash cut to Merrily We Roll Along as the bears ride the tandem bicycle awkwardly. That's funny. But also just seeing the mom and the papa just sort of lackadaisically laying back as the baby bear does all the work. That's another very good gag, because it just plays up how carefree they are. It's like, all right, well, they don't care, so the kid has to do everything. And then we bring in Goldilocks, and I love how Goldilocks somehow has the force of 10 men knocking. It's great. Here is where things get really silly, because here it cuts around the room, and then the pan to the wolf. Again, like, this is... The pan to the wolf is like, okay, this is a Red Riding Hood cartoon now. It's just very silly.
And it's Mel doing his Bugs Bunny voice of the time.
Yep.
Which, I don't know if we said we didn't like that. I fucking love that now.
Yeah.
That's great. It's just like, yeah, why not? It the wolf's supposed to be this wise guy type of person. Well, Bugs Bunny is a wise guy type of personality. So why not use the voice? It's early enough in the run. Yeah. No one's going to notice.
I like how he plays. And like, just some of the lines, like, you know, that outfit lives two blocks down the road at the first stop signal. Now you go over back there. Like, again, he's basically, there's like, okay, you're in the wrong fairy tale. You're looking for the three bears that's down the road. The only thing is that really showed shades of Tex's later work is Goldilocks going seductively, what can I do that Little Red Riding Hood can't? Like, this is a child, Tex.
Still don't like that.
No, it's not great.
Not okay.
No, it's not.
Not okay.
It works when Little Red Riding Hood is grown ass, like in Red Hot Riding Hood, but this is still a child. So, and it's, I mean, it is funny having Bernice Hansen doing the little kid voice saying that, but it's still kind of an icky kind of gag, but that's Tex. Yeah, around here is, because you hated this back when we covered it a couple years ago, of Papa Bear doing the siren noise and then pointing out, hey, I figured I'd do a siren noise. But I still laugh at Mama slapping him. Again, he's
trying. That's good.
To, yeah.
I also really do like just the wolf self-awareness.
Yes.
Say, why didn't I think of that? Yeah. Let's see now. Goldilocks. Ah, here it is. And after she ate the porridge, she became very sleepy and went upstairs to take a nap. Yeah, that's it. Hey, taxi! To the Three Bears house and step on it. I'll take care of any tickets.
I did mention this last time, but the pure surprise Robert C. Bruce has when Little Red Riding Hood shows up is fantastic. Like, he's lost control of the story and is trying to stick it with it. Like, and then the Little Green Forest was Little Red Riding Hood. Like, didn't expect you to be here. And there are more details about the note that the wolf leaves for Red Riding Hood these times. First of all, it says right on the top, reading time, 1 minute, 20 seconds. But the wolf signs off with, love the wolf. Like, that's putting things mildly. Like, yeah, with love, I'm going to eat you. I am eating you with peace and love.
Peace and love. There we go. Yeah, I was like, I know there's a Ringo joke in there.
It dawned on me. But yeah, I like the voice that Sarah Berner gives Red Riding Hood. It's a very Tex Avery voice. I read somewhere that around this time in the 40s, studios started phasing out voice actors like Bernice Hampson, who did cuter voices, in favor of more versatile talents like Sarah Berner and Bea Benaderet. And while it's very interesting to contrast them here, especially in the scene where they have the phone call and it's Sarah Berner talking to Bernice Hansen, I do think Burner is more of the talent here, but I love that these two can sort of be in the same scene and bounce off each other. Because it's two very different sets of abilities.
No one does a bad job voice acting-wise.
No! Tex!
It's not a Foxy situation.
No.
That was the
worst. Hello!
Terrible. Just terrible.
Terrible. But yeah, no, I think Sarah Berner might be the MVP of this whole thing because she has the most versatile work to do and gets the most done. But yeah, passing the note through the split screen from Little Red Riding Hood to Goldilocks is still an amazing gag. Now, here's the thing. Because when we originally went over this, we talked about the gag where Papa Bear looks at us and goes, you know, I read this story in last week's Reader's Digest. And we were like, oh, what are you doing? Knowing that the story's different this time, I do like Papa Bear's confidence in saying this to us. Like, I met a gag about how overtold these fairy tales are and how much reliance is kept and how much of them will stay the same.
Which, again, like, it came out by the Homer Simpson thing.
Yeah. What
is that Reader's Digest with a TV guide and it's a Simpsons joke? You know, it's really not that far removed.
Yeah.
Hey, Marge, says you're on Saturday night, Elf meets the Mormons.
But yeah, no, and of course it leads to this sort of, like, the Papa Bear discovering the wolf in his bed, and I love Tex's anxious mumbling when he realizes the wolf's in there.
Well, you are going to me,
the crown jewel of this bit is the animation of Papa Bear running down the stairs and taking his family out of the house, because it's the fluid animation that the background tilts as he sort of like runs down the stairs. It just sort of shifts to
so
like
good.
That was amazing. I loved that. To 2020 Jordan's credit, I still don't like the ending gag.
Well, I'll say this, because I think when we were critical of it, I think we didn't like the ending gags. We were so miffed by the whole damn short.
It's a silly little... It's a cheaper joke, but it kind of worked.
Well, actually, here's the thing, though. Now looking at the short again, I don't like that last joke, because it's the least good joke of the film.
Yeah!
Whole thing. It's not that good of a joke.
It's the one joke that's trying that isn't trying hard.
Yeah, like, that's really the reason why it's bad now. It's not just, oh, the whole short's bad, so we don't like this joke. It's like, no, this end button bit is just not as good as this whole meta contextual thing. I mean,
yeah,
honestly, if you want to be more meta about it, the coach just, like, ran towards the screen into the narrator's booth. It's like, hey, what are you doing? Get out of here!
That'd be funny. You just break through the... Yeah, I would love that. But no, as it is... And also, like, again, like with Goldilocks, you don't need to see a child's ass. You just don't.
No, that is a very good message to spread to all of our listeners.
Just say no. So, now that we're aware of who Tex Avery is and what he was trying to do with the Disney way, I think that the Bear's Tale works a lot better. Nothing really fails here, other than that one joke. You can just see that he's overextending moments and oversimplifying the story only to subvert beats and throw random other characters in there. I like this as a way of throwing off the world of an existing set-in-stone fairy tale. And I like the moments where Tex allows the world to be bawdier and less cute and more detailed and unappealing. It's still not perfect. Perhaps it's still a little bit too long. But I like this more than I did back in 2020. And I think we just needed some context.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think now, actually, I think we're a little bit too harsh on the first watch. The Bear's Tale goes practically out of its way to make fun of everything about the three bears of fairy tales in general, with some flourishes that only the Avery unit can provide, frankly. Yeah, this short holds up incredibly well, and now I understand why all the historians like it, because that's what threw us off.
Now I understand what Jerry Beck was on about. I have upgraded my original 3 out of 5, and I am now giving it a 4 out of 5.
I am also giving it a 4 out of 5 vandals.
Hell yeah. Good for us. We
did.
We grew as people.
We've learned. Isn't that great?
We've come a long way.
Well, let's see what you guys had to say about these shorts.
Yeah. Our first comment is from frequent commenter Spiderus Prime, who says, One Froggy Evening is one of the best shorts from the Jones Unit. I would agree. I would say it's probably like top three all time. All
right. We also have a comment from our Instagram, Dave from Maine 65, who says that I love One Froggy Evening. It and Three Little Bobs are perhaps my two favorite Looney Tunes.
That is a solid top two, man.
That's not bad. Those are really...
Those are
the Three amazing. Little Bobs is fucking amazing.
Oh, so, I love Three Little Bobs.
Yeah, oh my god, love it. Which is odd since neither featured the regular characters or Mel Blanc's voice work. They're just well done cartoons. Also, he has a question. He has a question for us. Because this is a relatively new Instagram follower, I believe.
Okay.
By the way, any chance you guys might cover Bugs Bunny Superstar? That we're going to do for a commentary. Actually, if you go over to our Patreon, that's actually a Patreon goal for us.
It
to
is.
Do a commentary on Bugs Bunny Superstar.
Once we get to a certain threshold, we'll be able to do that.
Documentaries are tough. I think for us to do an episode on Bugs Superstar would just be... First of all, the summarization would be bad. It would just be, Bob Clampett said this, and then they show Wild Hair, and then Bob Clampett said this, and then it's like, it's kind of...
And then Bob Clampett said this erroneously.
So that's going to be a potential commentary. And he also wants to know if any of the Censored 11 cartoons will ever be covered.
Never say never. I mean, it's still animation history, and there are still aspects of it that can be covered, as Whoopi Goldberg might say, you know, they were wrong then, and they were wrong now. But to say that to not include them or not talk about them is like to say they never existed. Also, I want to hang Porky upside by the knees.
Sure. All right. We also have a comment from Patreon as well as a friend of the show, James Irish from the. Pemmy, Chrissy, and James.
Oh, they've added her name to it. Right on, man.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
by the way, James, I believe, has been schooling me at Sporkle quizzes all week. I think that's him.
Oh, somebody shit, named really?
Somebody named Irish and a year that I'm pretty sure is the year he was born or something. And he friended me on Sporkle and has been hustling me at Sporkle quizzes all week. And I'm like, all right, let's go. Humble me. Great.
Nice. All right, so he says, at one point does brilliance become overstated? Has One Froggy Evening reached that point? Well, I thought that was my perspective when I first covered the cartoon, and then I realized that I was completely wrong. James is on to say, sometimes a piece of art earns so many accolades, receives so much analysis, that issuing a judgment with an original thought becomes next to impossible. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a very...
Well,
you know, like, that's essentially how we feel when we cover golden classic cartoons on this show. It's like, okay, like we had them with the Hunting Trilogy way back. It's like, oh man, what can we say about this cartoon? I haven't already said, but there is something you can say.
I mean, we always find something. Like it's not like there's like, well, we can't say anything about this, and so let's move on. Like, we try and at least talk about them knowing that their reputation is huge and also saying, well, there is still art here that can be dissected and could be discussed. And we try and at least do that one Friday evening. I think we did a really good job with it this time.
Yeah. James is on to say, the most famous of Chuck Jones' short subjects, including One Friday Evening, has reached that threshold long before I, James, started podcasting. Hence, I'm starting to think that including that one in my first episode on Looney Tunes material might have been a mistake. Hey, man, if this episode is anything to go by, you could do it again. Like, seriously. Like, that's why we did this episode. Was like, hey, we could probably look at these shorts again and really give a good, big perspective on it. And, like, by all means, like, if you want to look at Friday Evening again on your show, James, please do. Like, there's nothing wrong with watching the short again. It's a great cartoon. You know?
And we have a comment here from one of our patrons, Judy, who says, A Bear's Tale was just okay for me, nothing really special. The narrator reminded me of the narrator from the U.S. version of the Teletubbies. We made fun of this the first time we did it, where it was just like, and now we're doing the thing about the Three Bears with Papa Bear. That they were trying to be derivative and they're trying to be over the top and really, like, you know, making fun of it. And it took us a while to figure that out. Also, did the Papa Bear seem high to anyone? Maybe it's my stoner brain talking with all that random laughing. It seems like he added a little extra ingredient to his porridge. Yeah. Yeah, I can see it. Well done. As for one froggy evening, Judy goes on to say, sort of like what James said, what can I say that hasn't been said already? It's an absolute classic. Sometimes I catch myself singing Hello My Baby at random times. I had the thought the other day about what if the short took place today? Would the man be able to catch Michigan J. Frog on video? He may be an immortal frog god or whatever, but is he prepared for modern technology? That's a really interesting thing. Yeah. And I wonder what brought that up in the episode. Yeah.
We absolutely brought that up. So, yeah, good to know that same brain, essentially.
Hell yeah. Great minds.
Yeah, so thank you everyone for your comments this week.
Yes, much appreciated. Before we get to what we're covering next week, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our Patreon subscribers. That's right, we have a Patreon. If you didn't know about it, you know now. On Patreon, you can subscribe to That's Not Quite All Folks and get plenty of goodies, such as commentaries, bonus material, full uncut episode logs, and lots of fun stuff that you will get the opportunity to have at a $1 level or a $5 level. And I would just like to thank our current patrons, including Andrew, Triscrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the person, not the drink, my cousin Neil, and Judy M., for giving to this wonderful podcast. And if you'd like to be a part of that, go to patreon.com/TNQAF. Trust me, it'll be worth it.
All right. So, for next... As I am looking at the goddamn ducks, I had a schedule I didn't. One second, I have to kill the background music. That's better. Alright, so for next week's episode, we are going from talking about a Chuck Jones cartoon to talk about three more Chuck Jones cartoons. For the first of many times, we're assuming if all things go well over at Warner Brothers. Next week, we are looking at some more Wile E. Coyote cartoons.
But not all of these are Chuck, right? I think some of these are more contemporary, right?
Actually, no. Yeah. So this episode, welcome up, is more dedicated to the late 90s, early 2000s Roadrunner cartoons. There is one here directed by Chuck.
Yeah. I threw a 50s one in there. I couldn't help it.
That's fine, man. So the ones we're covering next week are Guided Muscle, Little Go Beep, followed by Wizard of Ow.
Yes. All very different and all with very different significances to the Looney chronology. But it's more Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons, and I'm always down for that.
Yeah, and it's Wile E. Coyote cartoons I know I haven't seen before, because I have not seen these late 90s, early 2000s ones.
But you've seen Guided Muscle. I know you have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's good. Thanks to the Sir Looney director, Little Go Beep's background is going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that next week. All right, so that is the end of this week's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow me at MarkHalem1995.
You can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If I come up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow at that_Looney. Both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also follow our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel where we post clips from episodes and also shorts from episodes, which we put on our TikTok that we have for some reason. You can also, if you want to support the podcast, like several of the fine people I just mentioned a couple of minutes ago, then go to www.patreon.com/TNQAF and join the fun for as little as a dollar.
All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and we look forward to never covering any of these cartoons again on this show. So I'm probably going to be watching One Frog the Evening a million more times before I die. Good night.